If you've ever thought that you might want to be an air traffic controller as your career, this is your week. We're talking to folks from the National Air Traffic Controllers Association, Jim Ullman, who's the Director of Safety and Technology, and two controllers, Ian Lewis from Southern California and Bob Obma from Indianapolis. Welcome, folks.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So, Jim, there's big news this week for those who want to be controllers.
There is. Timing is everything, right? Timing is everything.
That's right.
The national bid for what we call off-the-street hires was supposed to have been put out last month. However, the agency pulled it back and delayed it due to some issues that have been happening behind the scenes. And the bid actually comes out tomorrow morning. Tomorrow morning, July 27th, is the open bid to become an air traffic controller.
So, Jim, what this means is if people want to apply, there's a specific window with a time frame, and this is it.
Absolutely. And the only way you can do it is through usajobs.gov. Mm-hmm. And because of some of the things that have been going on behind the scenes, I would guess this opening is going to be open for 2, 3, 4 days at the max until they get X number of applicants, which is going to happen very quickly, and then it'll close without notice.
And what does X equal?
We don't know, right? I think the last bid, they had 25,000, somewhere
about
around
that.
There. About 25,000 oh, wow. people bid on positions.
For how many positions?
So the Oklahoma City Academy can only put through 1,800 students a year. So that's the max they can hire in a year. Some people actually will get a tentative offer and could be in the pipeline for 2 or 3 years before they actually go to the academy. Mm-hmm. So it can be a long process.
Can you run us through just basic qualifications?
Sure. This solicitation, actually, here's what you need to do. You have to be a U.S. citizen. You have to speak English clearly. Be older, no older than 30 years of age. Must have a combination 3 years of education and work experience. Required to pass a medical examination, a security investigation, FAA air traffic pre-employment tests, and staffing needs will determine the facility assignments that you'll be working at. So that's kind of one of the odd things about when we hire our people. You don't know where you're going.
And you have to go where you're assigned.
Yes, that's exactly okay. Right. And you know, it's funny because there are some people, I think, that want to be air traffic controllers, and they don't necessarily want to move, and we tell them, don't worry about that. You can get back to your home
sure.
base.
Sure.
Just take your assignment, get through the training, and then worry about going where you want to go.
Ian, you're a controller at SoCal, Southern California.
I am.
Do you tell us about it. What's a day in the life of a controller like?
Well, we have the badge of honor of being one of the busiest trade cons in the world, running about 2.5 million operations a year. And that airspace stretches from the Mexican border about 25 miles off the coast, east out towards Palm Springs, north out towards Palmsdale, then west out towards Ventura. We have 6 areas of specialty within that building, all doing separate functions with regards to geographic locations in San Diego, Long Beach, L.A. Basin, L.A. Departures, L.A. Arrivals. I work the Burbank area north of Los Angeles, so Van Nuys, Burbank, and Santa Monica airports.
Really busy.
Very busy. So one of the things we just had going on there, Santa Monica wanted to shorten their runway due to noise abatement issues. Well, what that did, it got rid of the G4s and G5s, but we still get the very light jets in there with the Eclipses and all the other ones. But now Van Nuys and Burbank have picked up tremendously because all the stars want to land there now.
Sure.
My path to air traffic was 10 years military. So I did the Navy for 10 years and moved around from San Diego and then out to Point Mugu and Ventura. And then I got out in 2010 and got a contract gig with Midwest Air Traffic Control in Afghanistan. Did that for another 8 months, and then I got picked up FAA. So I went to LA Center first, went to the school in Oklahoma City, just because I was military did not remove me from having to go to the class. So if I didn't pass that course, I didn't have a job. And it's a 70% pass rate in those classes. So if you don't make 70%, 69.9, you got to go. So you still have to take it seriously. For all those folks listening out there, it's a process, still a process. And for me, separating from the military to getting hired with the FAA took about a year and a half.
What's your day like now? How many hours on? How many hours off?
So like right that. Now I work a standard schedule, 8 hours. We have options to work a maxi flex, which is mean we can do 4 10s and 3 days off, or we can do 5 days at 9 hour shifts, another 4 days at 10 hour shifts, and then have days off between that. So those are negotiated at the local level between the union and the facility management there. But my day is 8 hours. So I go in a typical day on a day shift. We go in, relieve the mid-watch, and we start our basic morning push. That'll last for about maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours. And through that day, we get in trainees. We plug them in. They listen. They work the traffic. Or we might have pro days where we're just working traffic ourselves. In between that, we get our breaks, recuperative breaks for about 25, 30 minutes, come back in, and just keep doing that until our shift is over. There are certain days where we have assignments to come in and do some what we call recurrent training, where we are ELMS stuff, where we have to go over and look at computer modules just to stay fresh on certain procedures that we have to do day in and day out.
That's Ian Lewis, who's a controller in Southern California. Bob Obma is a controller in Indianapolis. Bob, you're in a little less busy part of the country, right?
Yeah, well, one would think so at Indianapolis, but we actually, we're kind of a weird center. We don't really have a major airport, but what we do is we support the other centers like Chicago, Cleveland, Washington, Atlanta. So we do all the Chicago arrivals, departures to the south, Atlanta arrivals, departures to the north, all the D.C., East Coast, East West Coast. So we're actually a very busy center, even though we don't have a major airport anymore in our center.
And how long have you been a controller?
I've been in for 11 years now. And I came in a different route than Ian. I came in through the CTI, which is a college training initiative. So I went to the University of North Dakota, one of many schools you can go to, get 2-year or 4-year degree. And that's how I came in. I went first on the pilot side, realized that wasn't for me. I wanted to keep flying fun, didn't want to make it a job. And so, I gave the air traffic thing a try and got hired on in Indianapolis.
Can you tell us a bit about the training for people who are interested in becoming a controller? What will that look like for them?
Yeah, so the training, it starts at Oklahoma City, and they train you whether you're off the street or you're coming from college or the military. They train you like you don't know anything. They start everyone off the same spot, and you're there for 4 to 6 months. You learn all the basics, aircraft identification, all the way to, you know, getting your radar and your D-sides. Once you're done there, you go to your facility. Now, hiring is always changing. When I got hired, I was told I was going to Indy Center. Now it's a little bit different. At the end of the academy, you get to pick. There'll be maybe 4 or 5 facilities, and depending on how you did in the class, if you were number one, you get first pick. Uh-huh. And if you're last, you kind of get whatever's left. So, like Jim was talking about, you don't know where you're going to go, and that's very true, until you get at the end of the academy, and then you get to select whatever is available. And then you go to the center, and the center is a very intense training program. You walk in the door, they hand you maps. You have to take map tests, high tests, low tests, airport tests, LOAs, SOPs, all the different things you need to know. It takes about 6 to 8 months. And then you start training on what's called the radar associate. So you're next to the radar controller. You're doing coordination, talking to other controllers, making sure the airspace looks good, coordinate with the military. That takes about a year. Go back to radar training. It takes about 3 to 4 months. And you'd go to the dive sim, which is our radar lab, practice on kind of the fake airplanes, and you go back on the floor and 2 more years of intense radar training. So the whole program in the center is anywhere from 3 to 5 years, depending on the level of facility and how well you do.
So we had a conversation yesterday about ADS-B. So between the two of you, a SoCal controller, a center controller, does ADS-B mean different things to you, or is it the same information?
Well, I mean, effectively looking at our scopes, what we're working with SoCal right now, we have Fusion, and those are taking all the ASR sites and putting them together to give us a more refreshed rate with regard to the targets that we see. Now, with regards to ADS-B, it helps the pilots inside the cockpit,
sure,
raising their situational awareness. But with regards to that, I've been telling folks, though, if I'm not talking to you, it's still an unverified altitude. Mm-hmm. Right, so until you call me,
yep,
and I give you a beacon code, and I positively radar identify you, I can't let you get close to any of those other planes until I give you that beacon code. So once I've radar identified you, now you're a positive contact, and we can run that traffic a little bit closer than what we normally would. You guys could possibly get visual on each other, but I know that person's there now, and they're talking to me.
Okay.
Yeah, the center is a little bit different. We're using ADS-B. The way we have ERAM, which is how our radar system works, and it doesn't really tell us if you're using radar or ADS-B. Behind the scenes in the computer system, it will actually pick whatever is better, whatever is more available or a better source, and we'll use that. But I tell you, when ADS-B came online, we started seeing a lot more aircraft in like the mountainous areas of Kentucky, where we have non-radar below 5,000 feet. You're starting to see aircraft at 2,000, 2,500. So it definitely is making a difference in the en route environment. Even though we don't know for sure if you're ADS-B or not, we have nothing on our scope that tells us that, but we're starting to see aircraft we never saw before.
So Jim Ullman, Director of Safety and Technology for NATCA, this bid opens real soon. Probably closes pretty soon after that.
That's correct.
Talk a little bit about rates of attrition at different stages in the process.
Yeah, so the standard attrition rate we've seen over the last 12 to 18 months at the Oklahoma City Academy, the success rate is right around 60%. So 40% of the people that go there with their hopes and dreams of being an air traffic controller can't pass the muster at the academy. So then you're assigned to your facility, and the attrition rate at the facility varies. It varies on how complicated it definitely varies on the level of facility that you're going to, right? If you're going to go to a level 4 or 5 in Casper, Wyoming, or something like that, not near as difficult as if you were going to go to a level 8 or a level 9 facility that has a lot more traffic. So there's a variable out there, so it's really hard. But generally, I'd say out of the 1,800, we lose 60% of them, probably. Yeah, something like that.
But the upside is what, Ian? What's the best thing about your job?
It's never the same day twice.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously, outside of working the operation and helping out pilots in situations when it gets hairy, doing outreach programs like this, bridging the gap between the pilots and the controllers. Because there's a huge gap between the understanding of what's happening in the cockpit, what's happening within a tower, what's happening in a radar room. And when we invite the pilots out to come to our outreach, what we call rain checks, so they come out to facilities and they walk around. You know, some of them come in with an ideology. They're about to have a nice little argument with us because they didn't get a certain service. And when they come through that room and they see everybody working, how quiet it is, and the details and meticulous, methodical movements that we make day in and day out, their eyes are big when they leave.
And you do it so well.
Well, we try to. So what we see inside of our job, the pride that we carry, what we do day in and day out, we see the mistakes. We try to minimize those on the air so you guys don't see them.
Yeah.
So what that chaos is orchestrated very well.
The life of an air traffic controller, that's Ian Lewis from the SoCal TRACON. We also heard from Bob Obma from Indianapolis Center and Jim Ullman, Director of Safety and Technology for NATCA. Folks, thank you for coming in today.
Hey, always fun.
Thanks so much for what you guys do.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Paul, we'll talk tomorrow.
I'll be here.
And you're listening to EAA Radio.